Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Somebody's in the back seat. Mama's home hungry.
Mark my words. Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat. You wish to drink. You wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me, I was wondering if I could get a Hill student loan.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Discipline has never been a problem, my dear.
Hey, Greg, what has two thumbs and absolutely 100% just completely neglected to edit last week's episode and release it on time?
Your editing monkey?
Yeah, Jules, my editing monkey, passed away this week. So, I know.
Oh, man,
I'm
sorry.
He's still down here. Haven't disposed of him yet.
Oh, God, why?
I just wanted to see how long a dead monkey could last in my basement. I don't know.
It would last. It would be there for a long time. It's just how long can you manage to live in the house with that smell?
Well, he hasn't attracted the rodents or the rats or the mice yet, so I think I've still got a little bit of time. And he hasn't lost any hair. He doesn't look like he's decomposing. So I don't know.
Is it because that you're embalming him with your expired eggnog?
Yes. Oh my God, I still have half a container of the eggnog I bought from the week that you, me, and Randy recorded together, and I'm so nervous to actually try it. I think it may have
No, it doesn't.
Past.
So I actually have a glass with me right now that I'm going to drink during the show, and as I was pouring it out, I realized the expiration date was December 31st.
Oh, well,
so
that's tomorrow.
It smells good, yeah, but you don't have much time. Like, it doesn't last for... It's like milk, but I don't know. It seems like it's a little more volatile than milk.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm nervous because the thing I hate about it is when I take it out of the fridge and I rock it back and forth, it leaves that residue around the sides of the bottle, and that makes me nervous that, like, something's congealing inside.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to start experimenting with it and see how bad it actually gets. I think that's the way to do it.
I agree with you 100%. I think what you should do is put it in a half full, like, clear soda bottle, put the cap on very tight, and leave it in your window.
Yep.
And take a photo a day.
Okay.
and post it.
I think that's what I'm going to do. I don't believe in New Year's resolutions anymore, so that's just going to be that's just going to be a fun little project that I'm not going to resolve to curdle eggnog this year. but I am going to...
Who knows? It might become something amazing.
I can't imagine it would. Greg.
David.
Welcome to Champa and Klein, the Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Champa.
I'm your other host, Greg Klein.
Now, guys, if you're new to the show... Again, I said this last week, really bad time for you to join in with Knight Rider because we are about to talk about the penultimate episode of the series. We've only got about 3 weeks of this show left before we wrap and launch a new show. But you're in a good place because you're about to launch a brand new era of our podcast, probably around the end of January. So the idea is that Greg and I pick a classic show from the 80s and dissect it episode by episode. We poke fun at these shows a lot, but it's out of complete love and admiration for an era that can never be replicated. Greg and I love to create our own side stories within these episodes to see where it takes us. Also, Greg is convinced that all 80s TV shows and movies are connected within the same universe, so that comes into play many, many times throughout. Greg, so I neglected to release an episode last week, so everyone's going to be getting a double whammy. So they're going to be getting our pre-Christmas show a couple hours before this one, and this is our post-Christmas show and our first episode of 2021. Let me ask you, buddy, how was your Christmas?
It was pretty good. I mean, it was okay. We didn't do anything. I mean, it was okay. It was good to be at home, and we Zoomed with my mom and some of my wife's family the day before or whatever that more. I don't know. Yeah, it was
okay.
Very strange. It crept up on us very fast, and we're like, shit, it's Christmas, like, tomorrow, you know? But it was good. It was good. We spent some time at home, and it was nice.
Okay.
So it was good in that respect, but definitely an odd one.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, though. Like, for as much of a shit show 2020 was, it really was all of a sudden, like, we all looked at each other and were like, oh, okay, Christmas is like less than 3 days away. That's a problem. But it was, mm-hmm. it was a generally good Christmas. I think you and I had shared some Christmas gifts via text. I think it was on Christmas Day. And I think we've reached the point in our lives and our ages where a lot of the things we got were more of the therapeutic gifts, because my daughters put in their own money to buy me a shiatsu lower back and neck massager with heated pads inside.
That's magnificent. That's magnificent. And my wife got me a heated shiatsu foot massager. So we're totally at the age where it's like, oh, look, it's a, you know, it's massagers and warmers and, you know, pain relievers. Good stuff.
And so,
speaking of pain reliever, I'm going to drink some of this eggnog right now.
So the other thing I got Kristen, speaking as we're talking about pains and aches, I bought Kristen a USB powered heated shawl that she can use on her desk when she's working from home. Now it plugs right into the side of her computer. I found it on Amazon.
Is it going to melt her computer?
I got worried about it just because, like, you know, it doesn't heat it up that fast and it doesn't get too hot. But, like, I worry about the fact that, you know, she's running Zoom with her students. She's got all of her documents open and she's got this and this and this. And then there's this other power draw that's pulling into this heated shawl. So I'm like, one day I'm worried that she's going to text me this picture of the blanket just like in flames underneath her computer.
Well, but I was just going to think it's going to like overload. Like, what kind of, I guess it's USB, so it's got to be like small amperage. That's it. Interesting. Wow, never thought about that.
She wanted like a rechargeable, or like she wanted like a heated blanket, and that was the best alternative I could find, which just made more sense for her while she's working. She can kind of just wrap it over her shoulders while she's talking to students, and it's nice. It keeps you nice and warm and toasty in that little corner. So this was our Christmas.
Very cool. You know, it's funny. Yeah. Christy wants the same thing. She wants a heated blanket.
Yep.
Because she's working from home and she's cold, so she wants a heated blanket.
I'll send you the link for the shawl, because it was actually pretty inexpensive and it's well worth the price for her.
Cool.
But that was about it. It was about as low key as you can get for a Christmas. I didn't get much else that is worth really, really talking about. What about anything else for you besides your foot massager?
Got a cool, what was it, like a book. Mom gave me a neat book about the history of the town I live in. What else? Jeez. Yeah, the stuff. Got some chocolates. Got an orange.
You got an orange?
Christy always puts an orange in the stocking.
Oh, okay.
So that if I don't get her something, she can beat me with it. And I can, she can juice the orange and have mimosas afterwards.
That's fair. Whatever.
Yeah. What? Since you got me some more Cards Against Humanity expansion packs.
Nice.
So, got the absurd pack. It was the all absurdist stuff, and another one's all about the '90s.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Yeah, pretty good times. Got Jumanji, so we're gonna have to play that.
Oh.
And so if you don't see me if all of a sudden you don't see or hear from either of us, it's because we got sucked in the game.
So if I drive to your house after about 2 months of not hearing from you, and all I hear is don't go in your house, or do I need to play it to get you out of the game?
You have to play it. You have to play it to get us out of the game.
And it's if I recall, the time in Jumanji it's not the same as the time in the real world, right? Like, time is kind of irrelative when you're in the game.
I don't know. I think it is real. I think it's real. But when the game, when you win the game, it all, you go back to the beginning, so it all gets erased. So, but if you're gone for 30 years, you're gone. You're stuck in the game for 30 years. Yeah.
But if I beat the game and you're gone for 30 years, you come back to the time when you actually left this earth to go into the game.
Right, and you do too. Like, everything goes back to normal, as far as I can tell. I haven't gotten stuck in the game yet, so I don't really know. But that's how.
Well, good luck with that.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, Greg, before we jump into the episode tonight, I want to throw out a couple of thank yous as we're getting ready to wind down Knight Rider and kick off with Airwolf by the end of the month. First thank you is to our dear friend and listener, Luke, who knocked it out of the park once again and crafted perhaps, I don't know if it's a better logo than the Knight Rider years, but it is, boy, am I happy with that. What were your thoughts when I sent it to you?
Joy, sheer joy, and that we don't deserve it.
No.
And there's absolutely no reason that we should have a logo that's that good. And yeah, I'm like, wow, yes, thank you.
So again, he just killed it. And we'll debut it later on this month for you guys to see before we kind of switch everything over to the Airwolf ears, because I'm really excited to share it with you guys. So be on the lookout for that. My second thank you is to, I think you heard it about 2 weeks ago, I dropped a promo in that Greg had recorded for the Airwolf years using our brand new theme song by my friend Steve Corning, who reached out and asked if we'd be willing to employ his services to compose a song for our new podcast. And I couldn't be happier with the theme song. It's just as good as I had hoped it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic too. So things are looking up. We're going to start out on a good foot again, even though we're already started and our feet have been running and our toenails are long and dragging.
That's
and
true.
Grinding on the pavement. But, you know, we're going to start out strong and keep going strong.
Well, and as is our case, we'll inevitably fizzle out somewhere near the halfway point of the new show, get tired of it, and not want to continue and force ourselves to do this.
No.
No, we won't.
We'll keep going. We'll be fine. We'll be fine. I think one thing, though, that we've learned is that we can't come up with anything that we're going to stick with, like the rating system for MacGyver and for Knight Rider.
No.
But work great and are rather fun. And we should come up with a system, but we know that we're just not going to follow it.
Well, that's the thing, is more than likely it's probably going to end up being something completely simplified for Airwolf, like, you know, how many chopper blades out of 5 are we going to rate this episode? We're going to try to, maybe simplicity is the key for our podcast this year, Greg.
Okay, I'm with that. I'm up. I think that's great. Okay. Yes. Yes.
All right. And then my last thank you is, so I told you guys a couple weeks ago that I was on the Pop-Up Filmcast for their 12 Days of Pop-Up, and I was entered in the running to win a box called the Prize Box of Amazing Things. There were quite a few retweets on Twitter for that, and I had no intentions of winning the prize box, and I fucking won the prize box of Amazing Things.
Good job, Dave. Way to play the game.
So there will more than likely be some sort of a live stream bonus episode unboxing, because Keith, if you're not following the Pop-Up Filmcast on any form of social media, do it, because they're really great and it's a fantastic podcast. But he posted a picture of the prize box. Dude, there's so much stuff coming in that box.
Yeah, it looked crazy.
So I'm very excited about it. So anyway, thank you to Keith and Derek for having me on the show, and thank you to everybody who submitted and put in stuff to that box, because I'm really excited to get it and enjoy my wares. And Greg, I don't know if you want to split it with me, but Keith says I don't have to.
Oh, fine. That I didn't put any effort into getting it anyway. Whatever. Okay. That's fine, Dave.
All right.
Fine.
All right. Fair enough. Greg, do you want to get into tonight's episode?
Fine. Yes. Yes. Yes, I do. Yes.
All right. Here we go, guys. It is the penultimate episode of Knight Rider for us, season 4, episode 21, Voodoo Knight. Okay. I mean, listen, this is not a series finale. I'm sorry. This is not. No. No. I reject it, Greg.
I reject it, too. It seemed almost like an accident. This couldn't have been planned to be. This is how we're going to end the season. I don't. What? What? It seemed like some middle of the season show that had no point.
Well, okay, and that's the thing, is that this. So I read. I did a little. Like I have. I don't do this a lot, but I did a little deep dive. So this was officially the last episode filmed of the series. So it's not like they shot it out of production order. This was indeed the last episode shot for the series, which just baffles me even more. And it gives me the thought, like, did they actually not know that they weren't going to go in for a fifth season until the very last hour? Like, that's what this feels like.
But it doesn't matter, because this isn't how you end a season.
No.
Like, there's no wrap-up to anything. Like, everything else, at least, well, I don't know, maybe the other seasons didn't end, you know, didn't wrap things up, but this just kind of fizzled, and Bonnie wasn't in it at all.
No, That's what pissed me off the most, is they replaced Bonnie with this other woman who just happened to show up as part of the plot. Like, she's in the semi for a good chunk of the episode, like, working with Devin over the course of the climax of the episode. It made no sense.
And Bonnie's absence finally gave Devin stuff to do. So Devin's actually... Where'd those glasses come from?
That was one of my notes.
They're enormous.
They're the oldest old man glasses I've ever seen.
Man, they were great. But overall, weird episode, and definitely not season finale, and absolutely not series finale. Like, this didn't add up. I don't understand the motivation to that.
No, no. And, like, I'm thinking about, like, when you end a season of a show, like, sometimes you're going to end on a cliffhanger to keep people interested over the summer. Sometimes you're going to end it maybe with a normal episode, but, like, the course of the episode, like, there's, like, these huge moments that happen. I'm thinking about, like, I think it was season 5 of MacGyver, where he's on his deathbed and he's trying to, like, get back from the afterlife as they're, like, I'm thinking about, like, these epic moments over the course of the episodes, or sometimes you close out these season-long story arcs, but, you know, Knight Rider didn't really have these, like, overarching stories. They were all standalone, but, like, it just, none of it felt like a true finale in any capacity.
So the only, I guess there were a few things that felt finale-ish about it. One thing was, we'll skip to the end, that RC's bike gets destroyed.
Yes.
So that felt kind of series finale, or, you know, that they're going to give him something to do, and, you know, that he's got to rebuild his bike now. Like, so that felt sort of it, but
yeah.
Other than that, well, the other thing was the guest stars. They had two kind of heavy hitters. They had Henry Gibson, and who's that other dude?
John Vernon.
That's right, John Vernon, who's been in it before, I think, too.
Yes, he was the sword fight episode when he was fighting MacGyver with a samurai sword, or Michael.
That's right, correct. So, you know, the fact that they had those two guys in it also felt like a season finale,
yeah,
because they're going to, you know, spare no expense. Let's make this a special episode. But the whole story and everything that happens and the whole doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm getting mad about it.
I know. So one more interesting piece before we kind of dick into the episode. Oh, God. I'm sorry. We're not going to dick
just
into
the tip.
We're just going to dick a little into the tip of the episode, Greg. It's not even 8 o'clock. And I'm like, I'm fucking punchy. No, what I was going to say was... is that at this point, so the series, I didn't realize this, but the series was actually still pulling in really solid ratings into its fourth season, even though the quality of the show had gone down. I guess the reason it was canceled was because of the high production costs, and NBC Universal had low expectations for selling the series in a syndicated market, which is so ironic because 30-some-odd years later, it's still seen in like 70-plus countries around the world.
Right, and it was syndicated, what, 1986? Strange, I don't know. It feels like they had something cool, they kind of lost their way and pulled the plug before they really dialed it in. Because one thing I have noticed, like, even though the storylines are stupid and, like, they really don't make sense and the whole point of the foundation is kind of getting lost, the characters, the relationship of the characters has really gotten much better. Like, it's fascinating. I don't know if it's because we've watched it for four seasons or the actors have developed these traits and these sort of things, but you can see the characters as more than just on the page, you know, like there's actual depth to them.
Yes.
Interacting with each other.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things we talk about for the last maybe 3 weeks, and unfortunately it was the last 3 weeks of the show, was this relationship between Michael and RC was finally starting to, like, show some meat. You know, there was some real good stuff there. They were fighting together. They were teaming up with each other. I like watching, and you're right, I think we've watched the show consistently for four seasons, but we're seeing these relationships finally start to form, and then they pull it off the air, and it's really frustrating.
And, like, Devin's... oh, good God.
I'm sorry.
And Devin's role is... I don't know. It's kind of ebbing back and forth. Like, sometimes he's really not in the picture. Other times, like today, because Bonnie's not around, he's, like, right... He's top dog. He's doing everything. But one thing, it's, like, it's interesting
right.
that, you know, they brought RC in to have another character and have, I guess, to have more fodder to write with. But the Bonnie... April character, that female, not side, female support, hasn't grown at all.
No.
Like, she's pretty much, you just feel bad for her the whole way through. Like, she's getting like, the shit end of the stick, and nothing, her character isn't getting developed. Like, nothing's really happening. Though she's developing all this really cool stuff, nothing's, like, they're not utilizing her at all. Like, not utilizing her well, at least.
No. And I'm actually happy that we've decided that this isn't going to be our last episode, because she is in the next episode that we're going to watch when we jump back to the middle of season 4. But I got a question for you as we jump into the episode.
Okay.
Okay. Do you think Michael would look good if he went back to buy that eel-skinned bomber jacket?
Is that what it was? Eel skin?
Yes.
Good crap. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't. If it matched his shoes, maybe.
Well, and that's what he said. He wanted it. He was concerned that it was going to. He wanted to match his cowboy boots.
So I have a question, though. Will Michael Knight look good if he buys something that he thinks he'll look good in? Do you know what I mean? Like, is his idea of what looks good very accurate or completely off base?
No, go ahead.
Okay, let's extrapolate that a little bit. If Michael Knight went into the Matrix, what would be his residual self-image?
Cosby sweaters. I think that would be what he thinks he looks the best in. Oh, no.
A mouthful of eggnog. Why did I time it like that? Cosby sweaters,
that's
Dave.
That's it. That's your answer right there.
Just Cosby sweaters. No pants. No boots.
A boxer briefs.
Just Cosby
sweaters.
That's it,
boxer briefs.
Okay. Kind of stretched out, so they're hanging down.
Yes.
You know.
But no button where the pee-pee would be.
What the shit? Okay.
So, I don't even know why we're going to talk about this episode. Really, the whole episode revolves around this fake voodoo princess who has been, she's created these earrings that is sort of like a mind control device that she's using to steal the keys to a vault that hold a $10 million crown.
Okay, from Mayan.
Yeah.
Mayan king from way back. Back in the day, as it were.
Whoever the fuck that guy was, I don't remember, but yeah, that's who it was.
Real, yeah. So it's so convoluted. It really is, because it's explained, but it's also not. It's just buried in the story. It's so weird. Yeah, and these earrings that like control people. How did she get them? Did she make them?
Well,
like, where is that coming from? Where's this technology?
That's the thing. They don't explain how she came about them. And Devin, like, rather half-assed, just, like, comes up with this explanation as to what they are. And I'm looking for my description of it. And now, of course, I can't find it. Oh, there it is. Devin scans one of the earrings that Michael stole, and he tells him that the earrings are receivers that create electrochemical responses in the brain. Not only do they like basically create this mind control, but they apparently like send off endorphins that make you stronger than an average human.
Okay. And you don't feel pain and like adrenaline and all this stuff, because should we just start at the top? Like that Michael's driving around in Kit, and he's listening to some rock and roll music,
yep,
which is pretty awesome, by the way, with some raucous cowbell in it.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's thinking about getting that eel skin bomber jacket.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there are these guys that are robbing this office someplace. Like, they come in like zombies, and they set off the silent alarm, and like Kit says, "Oh, Michael, someone set off a silent alarm nearby. Let's go check it out." You know, so Michael goes and checks it out and confronts these dudes. Somehow he goes into an office building and knows exactly what floor. It's like a skyscraper. Like, he knows what floor, what office, walks right in, and hey, fellas, what's going on? What's happening? Sees a security guard in a crumpled heap on the side. And confronts them and gets his ass kicked because some dude picks him up and, as he later says, slam dunks him into some bookshelves.
I mean, honest to God, that guy, he threw Michael so hard into that shelving, like just completely shattered. Like, Michael, there's no way Michael should have gotten up from that.
Well, he got up when he was thrown into that hole in the ground and probably broke his neck.
Yeah, of course.
So, of course, that's not much. Getting thrown into some bookshelves, that's not a big deal.
In a really wonderful I would love to have believed that this was a stunt guy. So after the two guys destroy Michael, they leave. The third guy, who we come to find out is actually the guy who owns this place, apparently the building is called it's Towers Gemstones. This guy is his last name is Towers, and he's the guy who owns the building. But as Michael goes to try to talk to this guy, he's still under this mind control, and he opens up the window of this apartment and just throws himself out of the window, and it was great dummy work on the way down.
Well, the shot we see looks more like he unenthusiastically dived, just kind of fell out, like rolled over the window ledge and just whoa, and froze into like a somewhat almost half fetal position, like kind of buckled over and then just fell like a sack of potatoes.
I wrote my notes.
But here's the thing that gets me. Yeah.
My note says that it looked like he was falling down in the fetal position. Like, it's just the way he was crunched up going down the windows.
But how do you can't open windows in skyscrapers? What the hell? Who built, he owns the building. I want to be able to open these windows, and I want to make sure that the ledge of the window is at shin height so I can walk into it and trip out of it. So perfect.
Absolutely.
Do you think that this place is called Towers Towers?
It better be. we're spending a weekend at Towers Towers.
That'd be awesome. Hey, if I had a last name like that, I'd name a building after myself. Towers, like Towers Towers.
I think, yeah, absolutely. So let's cut to the swanky party, Greg, shall we? After we watch this guy throw himself out a window.
Oh my God, yes.
The swankiest of parties.
A swanky party hosted by Henry Gibson.
And okay, did he just get shorter? Like, he looked so tiny in this episode.
I guess, but it's interesting. The movies we see him in, we don't really get long shots generally. I mean, like, he's with other people, but
yeah.
This is like we're actually seeing him in relation to other people. Mike, David Hasselhoff's what, 6'4", 6'3"?
Oh yeah, he's a tall beast.
Big anyway, and Henry Gibson's probably what, 5'3"?
He's absolutely tiny. Tiny guy. So he introduces at this party, Henry Gibson was 5'4". So he was still tiny, but not. So he introduces Harana, the princess of Butu, which is an island in Haiti, and apparently she's like into voodoo. Now, why was he introducing her into this party? Like, what was the whole deal with having her at this party? I didn't get that. Did you?
I don't know why. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't understand why she's even there. Once we learn her purpose, I don't know why she's at the party. And because she's already got the other two guys to go rob the place that and the Towers.
Right.
She somehow already got them, so I don't know why she's there. Okay. Like, maybe she's trying to get some info on other people to see who she can control. I don't know. There's no point because we don't find out.
It doesn't matter, Greg.
It doesn't. You're right.
So then we meet Claude Watkins as he's getting ready to go into the party, and he runs into a woman named Elizabeth Wesley, who confronts Claude about her father, who apparently died like weeks and weeks ago under mysterious circumstances, and she's convinced somehow that her father didn't commit suicide because apparently that's what it looked like. And Watkins is played by another 80s staple, John Vernon, who we've seen in MacGyver, earlier in Knight Rider. He was in Animal House, a bunch of other movies from the 80s that are escaping me at the moment. But he's another force. Like, you see him in the 80s, and he's like one of those that guys. He's just always there.
Well, it's interesting. Having you say his character's name, I never really noticed it, but it's not the best Claude Watkins.
No.
It's like, if you say it wrong, it's Claude Watkins. You're a Clodwat.
And what was the name of his company?
Dude, stop being such a Clodwat, Kins.
And his the name of his company was like the dumbest. Like, it could not have been more clear. Watkins Worldwide Artifacts. Wow, that's really catchy, dude.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Clodwat Worldwide.
Clodwat worldwide.
You're a giant Clodwat.
God, we're stupid.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Anyway, so she confronts him to because he's going into Henry Gibson's magnificent party and his staggeringly beautiful 80s swag pad. Mm-hmm. And she tries to get him to have him come inside. And and he's like, okay, well, come with me. And he walks up to the doorman, grabs her, stands her next to the doorman and says, she can't come into this building. And then he goes inside. And it was, what a dick move. Well, but it was
and
funny.
It's so dumb because, like, you know, 20 minutes later, when Michael gets the invitation to go to the party the next night, she just walks right through with Michael with no problem. The security guard doesn't turn her away.
This was great. Okay, so I don't... We can talk about this scene because she's just standing outside of the building. But first we have to talk about how Michael goes to the party. And first I have to open up one of these peanut butter M&M sharing size packages.
Oh boy.
Cause I'm going to eat some.
Yes, you are. So while Greg's opening that, we're going to get to the point in the episode where Elizabeth runs into Michael. I'm going to get there quickly. So back up at the party, this is before Michael shows up. The two men from earlier come into the dinner party, give Harana the bag that was stolen out of the vault. Harana reaches over, touches her necklace, and the two men like snap out of their trance and just start enjoying themselves at the party. So we know that Harana is controlling them at this point when she like pokes the necklace like right in the center of her chest.
But this is the weirdest thing. So when these guys snap out of it, they don't realize that they have an earring on, like a big one?
Nope. Nope. Apparently not. I guess that's...
Okay,
that's,
fine.
I mean, it was the mid-80s. I mean, earrings were like an in thing for people, so maybe they just didn't think about it. Maybe they thought they were in like a drunken haze, and that was like they got their ears pierced one night. I don't know.
Together on the same side with identical earrings?
Yep, that's it. Okay, so this is where we first meet Devin's old man glasses in the next in the next scene. He tells Michael that Donald Crane, Henry Gibson's character, is on the board of the City Museum and he's a member of the Parapsychology Society, which is the study of phenomena not explainable by natural laws. Again, that doesn't really, I mean, it kind of plays in, but it's not a focal point at all.
But Michael is distraught because he thinks that Towers jumped because Michael pressed him too hard. Like,
yes.
So Michael's kind of taking the blame for Towers jumping out of the tower.
And so Michael...
He got towered.
And so Michael asks Devin, well, why don't let me go to Crane's party tonight, Devin. You can get me a ticket, right? Go ahead. You can get me an invite. Isn't that right? And Devin's like, well, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of finagling, but I think I can... Of course, you're Devin Miles. You're going to make something work, and you're going to get him a ticket to the party, you dipshit.
Dude, that sounds like there's a song in there somewhere. You know, going... What's his name? Wayne?
Who? Donald Crane?
Donald Crane. Right. Okay. There's a song. It's like, Crane's party tonight. Gonna get a ticket from Devin. Crane party tonight. Gonna take it from Devin. I don't know. Something like that. Put some saxophone in there. You're all good.
I also love that, like, Donald Crane is literally having an identical party the next night. Like, is this just something he does every night? Does he just throw these swanky parties?
Yeah, it's how the 1% lives. Of course. Oh. Party after party after party after party after party after party after Crane's party tonight.
So then we get in at one little scene. So obviously we know that Devin is going to get Michael this invitation. So we cut to Watkins' Worldwide Artifacts where Crane is talking to him in the warehouse. And Watkins is panicking. Watclot is panicking because Towers Tower is dead. And this is where we find out what I said earlier, that there's a vault that houses a $10 million crown, but in order to open it, you need three keys, two of which belong to Watkins and Crane, and the third was Towers' key, which is now with Harana. So I think Watkins is starting to panic that whoever this is taking these keys and murdering the people who own the keys. And so this is where we get back to the next night, the party that next night, right?
Correct, yes, because Michael's going to go to the party again or go to the party to just snoop around, which is where he meets the girl on the way in.
Okay, so the bellhop lets her in with no problem as he literally turned her away the night before. So they go up into the party, and Michael...
Bellhop?
Did I say bellhop? The doorman,
You did, the doorman.
So Michael goes in and introduces himself to Donald Crane as Michael Knight, as he does, which we've come to love about Michael.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you want to try to remember? So he introduces himself as Michael Knight, but what is his job?
Oh, yeah.
What do you say? What do you think, Greg? Go for it.
So I wrote it and I texted it to you because I was like, what the hell does this mean?
Yep.
Okay, hold on. I'll find it.
Oh, we texted a lot, didn't we?
Okay. We did. Oh my God. So Michael, he's like, what do you do? I'm a writer for some magazine. I'm writing on para-ecclesiastical ascension to a higher plane. What?
Okay. What the shit?
What is that? What does that mean?
Well, it doesn't Crane...
I'm writing on a para-ecclesiastical ascension.
Doesn't Crane's reaction too? He's like, oh, well, good luck with that, I guess. Okay.
Pretty much. He's like, huh, okay, I thought I knew a lot, but para-ecclesiastical ascension to a higher plane.
That's...
Okay.
I wanted to Google it and look it up, but I was afraid I was afraid I'd end up on the dark web. Like, I was really nervous.
Yeah, no, that sounds like bullshit. Yeah, it'll send you some server and it'll crash your computer. No, don't look that up.
Okay, so Michael runs into Harana at the party. And he immediately mentions Jeremy Towers' name, and you can see in Harana's face, she doesn't even hide the fact that she's thrown off, and she's like tipped off by the fact that she knows who Towers is, because her face shifts entirely. Like, as soon as Michael mentions Towers,
completely.
She's like, oh shit, fuck. So she presses her necklace and calls in those two guys again.
Yeah, and Michael's like, oh look, we're here for another day. What'd you say? It's Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter. We're here for another dance.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah, and again, he goes to fight them, but nothing really happens.
Well, I wrote in my note that he starts a massive brawl, but it's really not, because it's just the two guys just basically throwing Michael back and forth like a ping pong ball.
Pretty much. And he's knocking over everything in the party. He knocks over the wet bar. He knocks over, like, the table full of, like, treats and stuff. And then... Yeah, and then what happens? I don't even know what happens. Somehow he gets out of there. Like, he's the fight stops.
I think he does something to kind of, like, he distracts them for something. I don't remember what the hell he does. But he and Elizabeth basically walk out of the party, and Harana...
Elizabeth leaves first. She leaves on her own. She sneaks out.
That's right. And then Michael goes after her. But I don't remember how he actually just got... I think he just left. Like, I think the fight was over, and he just left.
Yeah, he just left.
That's it.
He walks up to Henry Gibson, and he's like, no, don't hit me. And he just tells him, he says something snarky, and he leaves.
That's right.
I don't remember. I don't know. It was so unremarkable. Yeah.
We know what wasn't unremarkable is...
He grabs one of the earrings.
That's right.
He grabs one of the earrings off the guy that's somehow knocked out.
That's right. So then he leaves, and that's when we find out that the earrings are receivers that create electrochemical responses in the brain and make you like a superhuman.
Exactly.
So Harana shows Watkins. We cut back to the party, and Harana and Watkins are in the Room of Dreams, Greg.
Oh, so glorious. Oh, the Room of Dreams, David.
Oh my God. It's just like, and then so, you know, she starts telling him the future, and he thinks that she's just like reiterating things that he's already seen in the past, and she's like, oh, I see a world of untold treasures, and she somehow gives him this earring and slips it on and says, I'll show you the way to these untold treasures, pushes her necklace and puts him under mind control. And then he and the other two guys, Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan, leave the party. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Really, like, I love one thing I've noticed about the past couple episodes is that they're completely doing away with any pretenses. They're just doing it. You know, Michael just walked right up to her and says why he's here. All this shit. Like, there's no writing anymore. it's just plot. Just let's move it forward. That's it.
Well, that was it. And I had that thought. I was like, they've really just, if this truly was the last episode, then clearly the scriptwriters were just like, let's just write a 40-page treatment and they'll figure it out. Like, that's really what it felt like.
Yeah, pretty much.
So Kit picks up the signal of the earrings, and he and Michael go after the signal, which ends up turning them into Watkins' warehouse, the worldwide artifact. But Elizabeth has already gotten there, and like an idiot, she walks right into this giant glass orb, knocking it over and shattering it, tipping everyone off that she's in the warehouse.
Yeah, and then handily gets caught because she hides behind a curtain, but he can see her feet through a mirror that's right there in front of her. So she just gets caught. Whatever. She's like, oh, hi, guys. But she doesn't really realize that they're under mind control. And they take her and they tie her up someplace when Michael shows up and another fight ensues. It's with Sergeant Slaughter, I think. Yeah, I don't know. One of the two guys. And more beating up and stuff. And then Michael unties her and they leave and they go back to the party.
So they're getting ready to go back to the party, but they're stopped at gunpoint by Watkins. But rather than shoot them, Watkins turns the gun on himself and blows his brains out.
Oh, right. Yeah. And she's like, oh, my God. And she just saw this guy shoot himself. And the other thing is like, okay, so this has all happened within 24 hours. So Towers killed himself the day before. And here they are at the second party. And Michael, you know, Michael was there. Michael was a witness to watching him jump out of the window. And it's just like, it's water under the bridge. They swept it under the rug. And now Michael's at this party. They go to this warehouse. This guy shoots himself in the head. And then he's back at the party again.
Well, and then we get this half-assed story about why Elizabeth was chasing after Watkins. And I lost interest in what she was trying to say. It had something to do with the fact that Elizabeth and her father were on an expedition with Watkins and Towers and some other guy that they don't know. And she's pretty sure that her dad was murdered, but she doesn't know why. And they made it look like a suicide. And I lost interest in what the story was because it was just I didn't care.
Yeah, I think basically the story was that her father was killed by these other three guys to get that crown for themselves. That's really what it was. Yeah, and now Watkins has the crown, or one of the guys has the crown. Who cares? They all three of them have the crown, and they all have individual keys, but now all the guys that own the keys, two of them are dead. The only one that's left is voodoo Crane. Guy. Crane, yeah.
Voodoo guy.
So I guess he's pulling the strings, hey?
So here comes the big reveal about Harana, and it's the most anticlimactic moment. Devin goes, well, Harana is really Bonita Vance. She has a history of impersonating royalty. And then they move on.
Great. There you go. They show a mugshot of her. And that's it. So
that's all we
she's an impersonator. She's impersonating as this voodoo princess or whatever. Still doesn't explain where the earrings came from. I was just about to say ear cuffs, but that doesn't make sense. Sure. Good enough.
Whatever, man. So Michael leaves the semi to go have a conversation with Crane, and we see that Crane is attempting to basically settle up his debt with Harana. He's gonna pay her the $1 million and say, "All right, your job's done. This is here. Take your money and go." But instead of paying her, he pulls a gun on her and threatens to turn her in if she doesn't give up the keys to him. Somehow, Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan show up again. Kind of arm lock Crane. Harana puts the earring on Crane and forces him to then give up his key.
That's it.
That's there it is. Go ahead.
I got a mouthful of candy.
Chew your M&Ms,
Greg. Oh, so good. So peanut buttery. Mm. Yeah, and she gives him instructions to go to some building somewhere and wait in the basement.
That's right. Yes. And so in another quick scene, Devin basically, in a quick, like, very, like, one line, Devin's like, well, Michael, you can deactivate these with a high-frequency tone, so that's probably the best way to shut down those earrings.
Okay.
Again, just, like, got there
super
real quick,
specific,
no explanation, but...
Very specific pulses and tones and frequencies. Yeah, very, very easy to do for Kit.
Of course, absolutely. So, like you said, Greg, Harana tells Crane to go to this building and wait for further instructions. So he leaves in his car just as Michael and Kit pull up. And when Michael goes into Crane's apartment, he's confronted by Harana. He asks her flat out to tell him about the earrings. She dodges the question, instead calling in Hogan and Slaughter, who knock Michael out. And then Harana puts the earring on Michael, and one of the men crushes his comlink.
I thought they were going to do a thing like, we all keep referencing this movie, North by Northwest, where Kaplan gets held down not well, whoever, Cary Grant's character, Roger Thornhill, gets held down on the on the couch and forced to drink an entire bottle of bourbon and then put in a car and drive off a cliff. That would have been much better. Like if they held Michael down and instead of putting an earring on him, they poured a whole bottle of bourbon in him and then they put him in Kit and then he drove off a cliff.
That would have been a better scenario than this, than just basically sending Michael to the same building as Donald Crane.
Exactly. Oh yeah.
And so it does, and actually I was shocked at this next part because when Michael, you know, so Michael is under the mind control and he gets in Kit and drives away. I'm surprised at how long it took Kit to realize that Michael has one of the earrings on. Were you surprised at how long that took?
Yeah, like he didn't notice it at all. Like you thought he would have noticed as soon as Michael sat in the car, considering Kit could pick up the other earrings from halfway across the town, you know, and know exactly where they were. But when he's sitting inside of Michael, wait a minute. Not inside of Michael.
Continue, Greg.
When Michael is sitting inside of Kit and the earring is inside of Kit, he doesn't notice it.
It's just how would Kit get inside Michael? How does that work?
I don't know. I mean, with nanotechnology, they can really shrink him down, you know, and put him into something the size of maybe a lipstick tube.
Okay, fair enough. It took far too long. And even the fact that, like, Michael is stone silent. He's not saying a word to Kit. Kit's been talking to him for minutes, and Michael's just sitting there quietly. And then he finally scans and calls Devin and says Michael's under the influence of the earrings, and they deactivate it like that.
Yeah, piece of cake. I mean, I did like seeing Michael as a zombie. I thought that was great. But yeah, the only thing Michael said is answered was when Kit asked him, where are we going? And he said the address, the same place that whatever's character was going there in the basement of the building.
Henry Gibson for the United, the United Federation for the, what is the Kentucky Fried movie commercial?
United Appeal for the Dead.
United Appeal for the Dead. That's who he's working for. That's his character. He just resurrected it.
I love it.
So the location that they're going to is a building that's quote unquote scheduled for demolition. It's not really. It's just that Hirana and those men just put a bunch of dynamite in the lower level of the garage.
No, what I understood was it absolutely truly was scheduled for demolition, but the next day.
Oh,
I don't. That's yeah. But somehow they blew it up a day early, which, sure, why not? If you can have earring mind control devices, you can do that, sure. Yeah,
exactly. So I love this. So Michael pulls into the basement level of the garage, and Crane is just sitting there completely, just like...
Yeah, he's just sitting there, like, all like, So I guess he drove there. That's the other thing. So Michael drove into the basement. So he just drove up to the building and walked into the basement.
Yeah, because where was Crane's car?
Because his car isn't anywhere.
I was going to say his car was not there.
I don't know.
But RC...
Yeah, no, that's true.
RC3 shows up because he wants to try to save Michael. And he gets in and they're like, all right, we got to get out of here. And I love that when they finally deactivate Crane's earring, they just throw him in the back seat of Kit. They don't with no care whatsoever as to his well-being. They just toss him like a rag doll into the back seat. And then they drive.
And RC gets in the front seat,
yeah,
which doesn't make sense. Or, you know, the passenger seat, which doesn't make sense. And he's like, oh, wait, my bike. And they tear off out of there because a bomb's going to go off in 10 seconds.
Ride your motorcycle out. I don't understand why he didn't. Does that make that doesn't make any sense?
No, it doesn't make sense. They just did it so his bike could get destroyed. That's
well,
it
also doesn't make sense how his motorcycle was recovered, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, you also know what doesn't make sense? Fucking mind control earrings.
Also true. That turn you into superhumans? Yeah, no, not cool, guys. Okay, so the climax of the episode is, like, you know, the final showdown. Hirana shows up, and she sends her men back after Crane. But I love the moment when Kit deactivates Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan, and they both kind of stand there, and they're like, huh? But then they continue to go after Michael and RC3.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Like, they continue to fight. They didn't know who these guys... So that just means that, what, you're conscious anyway? Like, That just didn't add up. That was not consistent with the whole scheme.
Right,
there.
And it was funny because like it almost like showed the juxtaposition of them as the superhumans, but then they go after Michael and RC as the normal humans, and Michael and RC just beat the ever-living shit out of them.
Easily. Yeah. Well, there's some good fights. It was a good fight scene.
I mean, there were solid fights, and I love, so Hirana tries to drive away, and Michael tells Kit to put a little voodoo on her car, which is apparently Kit just pulling up in front of her and stopping her from driving away.
Yeah, that's it. She doesn't back up. She doesn't go anywhere.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope. She just has that defeated look on her face when Michael takes the crown, and that's it.
Lame. Lame.
Okay, so Greg, how the hell was any of that motorcycle recovered when we get to the finale of the episode?
Basically, RC said that he had to shell over a couple of clams or whatever to the construction crew, and they dug it out for him. That's what I understood.
That would not. It was the basement level.
I had to hand over some bones.
Oh my God, Greg! It makes no sense.
Yeah, but maybe it was like protected by some beam, and I don't know. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because that's literally...
Bonnie can rebuild it.
Well, it's all right. We never get closure to that because Bonnie never shows up again. Greg, that's kind of where we end the episode with Michael and RC kind of having this moment and this laugh over the motorcycle when Devin comes out and was like, oh, what is that? Oh, gosh. He's like horrified by what he's looking at. And they just all share a laugh about RC's destroyed motorcycle. And that's where we end the episode.
Yeah, thus the season. And did you notice that? I just really noticed that the inside of the semi is like carpeted and like shag carpet. And
sure
RC is working on his bike in there on the carpet.
Yep.
Well, fascinating. But that's it. There's not even like a family reunion. They all just kind of laugh and that's it. Episode, season over.
Series over.
Yeah.
I think if you put this in the middle of the season, it would have been a really solid episode. I think what disappoints me the most is that this is what they wrote to end their show with. And it was just a really disappointing way to close out this show. I don't know.
I agree. Like this, even if they knew the series was ending, this is no way to end a season. It was just stupid.
Yeah.
Just lame. And like the fact that maybe there was something where Patricia McPherson wasn't available for the shoot. I don't know, but there's no reason why Bonnie shouldn't have been in it.
Right.
If this was the last, you know, the last episode of the season. Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. So I think that's part of why, because as we've been going along in season four, a lot of our listeners have been telling us, don't watch The Scent of Roses until the final episode. Do not do it. You will be disappointed if you use Voodoo Night as the final episode. And after reading the synopsis of The Scent of Roses, it makes so much more sense as to how this could fittingly close out the series. Do you want to know what The Scent of Roses is about, Greg?
Yes, please.
Okay. So next week's episode is the fans series finale, episode 22, The Scent of Roses. After he is shot and almost killed, Michael falls into a deep depression and decides to quit the foundation.
I'm excited. Hasn't he already done that before, though?
So, yes, but like, explain to me how they felt like this was a good mid-season episode to just like throw in the halfway point of the show. What sense does this make?
For the same reason that they had this as the last episode of the season.
Yeah, I guess. I just, you know who else is in this episode, Greg, which I think I'm very happy to see?
Who?
Stevie is in this episode.
Stevie. Shit, from MacGyver?
Whitebird.
Oh, Whitebird.
The Whitebird herself.
Oh, right. Oh, not from MacGyver.
Whitebird.
Jesus, God, Stevie. Oh, man, I'm sorry, Whitebird. Whitebird in the garden cave.
And the crazy music video episode, too.
Oh, I loved that one. That was great.
They
needed to have more recurring characters.
Yes,
I think that's
the
problem with some of these. Like MacGyver at least had Murdoch, but this one, like Garth is dead, and Stevie should have been in more than just like three episodes.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Greg,
Dave,
do you have any closing thoughts this evening?
I just had a solid bout of deja vu right then, this past 2 seconds. Those are my closing thoughts.
Oh, geez, all right. All right, gentlemen and ladies, listen, if you want to get in touch with us, you know how to do it at this point. We got some listeners showing up to the show. We've got new listeners. We have a new listener who is there. He and his co-host are doing a minute-by-minute rewatch of RoboCop. It's called 60 Seconds to Comply. They're new listeners. They've just jumped on with the show a couple weeks ago, so I'm really excited to have them. You guys know how to find us. You can call us on the hotline at 207-835-1954 and leave us a voicemail or a hotline about anything. Reach out to us. Let us know what you think of the show. Welcome to the show if you're just joining us for the first time. Welcome to Airwolf. We cannot wait to take that journey with you guys. So we're really looking forward to jumping into that. But until next week, guys, I am your host, Michael's lack of a buttonhole on his boxer briefs.
I am a fine collection of Michael's cashmere dickhole sweaters.
Oh, have a fantastic week.
Discipline has never been a problem. Hang on to your fender, pal.
I'm thinking, kid. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more Audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following at Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, at Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.